Okay. Parshat Lech Lecha, one of the more important parshot in the Torah, from the point of view of it giving us the instruction for really the beginning of a new creation. And that is from Avraham forward. So God tells Avraham, get up and go. Lech lecha. Go for yourself. It doesn't translate well into English, right? Could have just said lech, go. He didn't. He said lech lecha, go for yourself. It's an interesting concept. The intent is get up and go, and this is what you're supposed to do. I'm telling you to do it, right? And so Avraham at this point is in Haran. He is not in Ur of the Chasdim. He's not down in Iraq. He's in Lebanon. Right? So how did he get to Lebanon? Well, he got up and went from Iraq. Him with his father and all their household and everything else. And so they went up to Haran. And there they are. And from there, God says, go. Okay, so why they got up and left from Ur is the subject of a whole lot of writing in the Midrash. A whole lot of writing in the Midrash. So the Midrash deals with the younger Avraham and how they get up to Haran. And now this Torah portion deals with why Avraham leaves Haran. Now, God says go, and he goes. He goes until he's around Shechem, right? Shechem. Today it's called Shechem. Okay, it's north of Yerushalayim. It's in the Shomron. It's in the mountains of Israel. Israel. And God tells Avraham, this is going to be your land. I'm giving you this land. Okay, but there's a famine. So he leaves. And he goes down to Egypt. All right, so there's a slight pause. And then he takes off again. And we come to something very interesting that goes on in Egypt. And that is that he pimps out his wife to the Pharaoh. Right? Basically, he says, I'm afraid they're going to kill me. So I don't really care what happens to you. And so Sarai is very beautiful, so Pharaoh picks her up and doesn't kill Avraham. And then all kinds of calamities start to happen in Egypt. And somehow Pharaoh figures out, right, that he's got somebody else's wife. And so he says, I can't have this, so here, take her. She's your wife. I don't know why you didn't tell me, but get out of here. So he's thrown out of Egypt and he comes back to the land of Canaan. Now, the whole story, from Haran down to Egypt, or down to Shechem, from Shechem to Egypt, and Egypt back to Canaan, eventually gets Avraham back to the land that God gives him. It's kind of like there's a drive-by dwelling there, right? He comes to Shechem, oh, this is going to be yours, keep going. And so he keeps going, goes down into Egypt and all of that mess. And now he's back where he's supposed to be. So there's two questions. First one is, why does God tell him to get up and go? And why did he do it? Right? So the first thing we have to understand really is that Avraham and Terach, his father, and everything going on in Haran, they're quite comfortable. They got a good life. They got a good life. And Avraham is told by God to get up and go. And so he gets up and goes. But this is not the first time. Right? The first time was when he got up and went from Ur and ended up in Haran. So why does Avraham choose to get up and go? Right? It's a faith thing. God says get up and go, and so he gets up and goes. Okay, so he gets up and goes, and he ends up in Shechem, and God says, I'm going to give all of this to you, and you're going to be a father of many nations, and stars in the sky, and all of this stuff, but get out of here because there's a famine. So he goes down to Egypt, and that's a mess. And then he comes back. So what we're hit with is this juxtaposition of Avraham being faithful to God. And God says, I don't care how comfortable you are, get up and go down to this land I'm going to give you. And he gets there as a famine, he keeps going, and he does something extraordinarily wicked. So here's Avraham. God says, go, and he goes, and then he gets into Egypt, and he says, I don't want to die, so whatever you want to do with my wife is fine. And yet, Avram is counted as righteous. Avram is counted as righteous, even though he does this to his wife. Hebrews 11. His faith is counted as righteousness. Right? This is kind of tough to take, you know. Girls, I'm sure you don't want your husbands doing this. Why is Avraham counted as righteous? The answer is very simple. Avraham isn't counted as righteous. There's a difference between righteous and righteousness. Okay? Righteous is an act. What he did when God said, Lech Lecha, that was a righteous act. And God looked at Avraham's faith and said, because of his faith, he did something righteous. He did something good. He followed God's commandment. God said, get, he went. That is a righteous act. Is Avraham righteous? Is a state of being? And the answer is no. None of us are. You see the difference. An act versus a state of being. Okay, Greek, Roman times, state of being is a big deal. There's all kinds of philosophers talking about that. That's not the Hebrew mindset. That's not the Jewish mindset. We look at Acts, right? Did King David have faith? Yes. Did he do acts of righteousness? Yes. Did he do acts that weren't so righteous? Of course. But God, because of righteous acts, looks at the righteousness of the acts of an individual, and the not so righteous acts, as long as there's righteous acts, those are not counted. They're not counted. This is not something new that started with Yeshua. This is something that's in the Bible all the way along. Okay? That's how the Catholics incorrectly got to the idea of indulgences. Now, I want you to understand this. Everybody know what indulgences were? Back in the Middle Ages, before the Protestant Reformation, the Catholic Church went around, had a thing where, okay, if you wanted to sin and do something really bad, if you do a righteous act, you give money to the church, then it gives you leeway so you could go sin. Okay, and it was called indulgences. Well, we'll indulge, you know, give enough money, we'll indulge you. Now, as much as I would like for that to bring money into the coffers of the synagogue, it doesn't really work that way. Doesn't work that way. Why not? Because it's all about intent of the heart. Always was. So why, if your intent is correct, do you have this situation where God will look at an act that you have that is righteous and because of your faith count it as righteousness? Okay, and the answer is very simple. Grace. Grace. It's because God chooses to do this. Just because. It's a gift from God. So Abraham's righteousness was because of his faith, and it was granted as grace from God way before Yeshua. So God has been a God of grace all along, and Lech Lecha points it out. Shabbat Shalom. Okay, I always do that. Close the text and then you'd open it back up. So, I want to look at this passage in Matityahu in Matthew. Matityahu, Mattathias in Greek, Matthew in English. It's all the same name. So, as we approach Hanukkah and we start talking about Mattathias, it's Matthew, it's the same name. Just multiple languages. I had a friend in Israel when I was a kid. His name was Moshiko, which is a diminutive for Moshe, whose parents were from Morocco. And because of that, when Moshiko was growing up, he spoke Arabic as well as Hebrew in Morocco. So he spoke Spanish because it's just, you know, if you're Hercules, you could throw a discus from Morocco and hit the island of Gibraltar, which is right there in Spain. And he also spoke French because the French colonized all of North Africa. So he spoke, and then he spoke enough English a little bit to be able to get on with me okay as I was learning Hebrew. So he spoke English, French, Spanish, Arabic, and Hebrew. And he was a great guy. He's one of those guys I didn't want to get angry at me because he was a Israel junior national champion in judo and actually won the European Games. So, off the subject, he once choked me out with his feet, with his toes. But I was being very in vogue at the time and trying to diminish my Americanhood, right? You know, I'm American, that's not a good thing. This is right in the middle of the anti-war movement in the United States. So pretty much if you're in high school at that point, you're looking at potentially going to Vietnam, and protest movements are all over the place. And in that, not too dissimilar from now, there's a whole segment of the country that wants us to believe that America is not a good country, it's not a great country, despite all kinds of evidence to the contrary. So I was in the middle of doing this, and Moshiko looked at me and he said, hang on a minute. He said, you speak English because you're American. I speak all of these languages because I have to. America is a great country. That's why you only have to speak English. Everybody wants to be like America. So don't cut yourself down for only speaking English. You're learning Hebrew. And that's an indication of a great nation, not an indication of a bad nation in your education. So, okay, so I feel better. Thank you. Now, don't touch me. Now, going from Mattathias, Matthew, Matityahu, okay, as one of the disciples that would be sent out, that was sent out, right? So he's writing his version of the gospel of the good news of the Besorah, right? And there's four different versions, three of which are synoptic, which basically tell the story of the life of Yeshua. And there are differences in all of them. And this is one of the differences in them. This is the one where God says, Lech Lecha. God says, Lech Lecha. Go, therefore go and make people from all nations into Talmidim, immersing them into the reality of the Father and the Son and the Ruach HaKodesh. Right? And usually when people quote this verse, that's where they stop. We, of course, are not going to, because we're smart. Right? So go out, go do what you're supposed to do. Immersing them into the reality of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, the Ruach HaKodesh. Now, I like this translation, because it takes the meaning of the verse. It's not meaning going and dunking them in water, although dunking them in water is fine. It means immersing themselves in the reality, or immerse them in the reality of God. Immerse people in the reality of God. Go out and do this. Okay? So, like Avraham, at the time, we are instructed, the Talmidim were instructed, and so we're instructed to go out and immerse people in the reality of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. How? What does this mean? How are we supposed to immerse them in the reality of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit? Right? Make Talmidim. Make them students. Right? Students of what? Well, of the Father and Son and the Holy Spirit, right? So we're supposed to teach them that. I'll take it to where my wife can see me. So, let me explain to you about the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Right? We will have philosophical discourse about the ramifications of some of the ideas. Okay, so that was my best impression. Okay, and that's not what it says. It says, teaching them everything I have commanded you. Teaching the commandments. Everything God has commanded us. What has God commanded us to do? Right? He's asked us in the best William F. Buckley voice to begin to comprehend the enormity of the one God. No. That's not what we're supposed to do. Okay, when we go out, is it okay to have theological discussions with folks? Sure, fine. Right? But is that what we're supposed to do? No. What are we supposed to do? Teach them to do the commandments. Very Jewish. You know, it's how you act that's important. It's the things that you do that are important. Whether you are theologically similar to, that's not it. Don't just stand there, do something. Do the commandments. And it says it right in the Great Commission. And that part of the sentence that's left out from most people. Go do the commandments. Okay. What commandments? Well, a bunch of Purushim that go and ask Yeshua the same thing. What's the most important commandment? And The first thing that Yeshua says is Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu Adonai Echad. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. Then he says, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. We just read it. Every morning and every evening we're supposed to read this. So we have it in morning services, which we just concluded. Faith, I'm not finished. Love your neighbor as yourself. Almost as important. It says so. Okay. Every one of the 613 commandments can fall into one of the two categories. All of the Ten Commandments fall into one of the two categories. Right? You cannot come up with a commandment that God tells us that doesn't fall into one of those two categories, right? Netilat yadayim. We wash our hands before we come into the synagogue, at least up to the bima. Why? Because God says we are supposed to be, when we go into the temple, ritually clean. And we don't have a temple. We commemorate the temple with the synagogue and the synagogue service to remind ourselves we wash our hands. Spiritual washing. They're supposed to be clean before you get there. And you pour water on your hands and you make the blessing on Netilat Yadayim, on the washing of the hands. Okay? What category does this fall under? Why do we do it? We love God. If we didn't love God, we wouldn't do it. It's that simple. Okay. Lashon hara, the evil tongue. Don't speak badly about people. Even if what you're saying is true, that's not important. Don't say it for a reason that's going to be hurtful. Don't say it to hurt, but don't hurt people with your mouth. Don't do it. Love your neighbor as yourself. That's the other category. So we're supposed to go out and teach people these things. That's what Yeshua told the disciples. That's the reality of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Behave well. Do these things. Love God. Love your neighbor. That's the commandments. That's what he commanded us to do. Okay? It's really very simple. What did God tell Abraham to do? Go to the land. Why? Because he loved God. What had Abraham been doing? And what did he continue to do once he was in the land? He was talking to people. He was talking to people about God. Okay? That's why it says, leave all of the souls that you made in Haran. Made souls. How did he make souls? He immersed them in the reality of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. How did he do that? Okay, told him to do the commandments. God said exactly the same thing that Yeshua said. Funny, you know, when the source is the same, tend to say the same things. Okay, Shabbat Shalom.